Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 5, Episode 4.
Indeed it is.
What's our topic this time, Drew?
Okay, today it's neither games nor films, but it is stuff. We are looking at a TV series, which has been kind of, like, it's certainly been heavily pushed into my Netflix kind of front page recently.
Yeah.
And it's Night Flyers, which is a sci-fi series credited as being from the mind of George R. R. Martin, who you have heard of from, well, you know what you've heard of him from. You've heard of George R. R. Martin. I'm not going to explain what George R. R. Martin's from. If you don't know, where have you been for the past 8 years?
Why are you listening to us? Even though we never talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I don't even watch it, but yeah, we all know.
Me either. That's so weird that, that neither of us watch it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because the world and his dog seems to watch Game of Thrones. Yeah, so it popped up on my Netflix and I was like, oh, okay. It's like, well, I don't like Game of Thrones. I can see why other people like it. You know, there's some good storytelling in it and whatnot, but yeah, I just can't deal with the sort of misogyny and white savior things. And so I was like, oh, maybe he does better with sci-fi. So yeah, so I had a look. And yeah, here we are.
Okay. Yeah, and I've had a look. You're a bit further than me. I think you watched 3 episodes and I've watched 2.
Yeah.
We haven't gone all the way through. But we should say up front that we're going to be just spoiling the stuff that is in those 3 episodes. So if you haven't seen it and you really, really want to see it, go and watch those first and then come back to us.
Yeah.
But also, not to spoil the outcome of this episode, but we don't really recommend doing that.
No. Just listen to us.
Yeah.
And don't do the first bit.
No.
Yeah, so I guess just a little synopsis of the setting. Basically, the setup is that Earth is in a bit of a state in terms of the environment. I think it's basically a plague on all your houses and, you know, sort of the environment screwed, that sort of thing. So humanity is desperate for a solution. And there's a sort of, there's this theory that there's some aliens that might be able to help with some new technology they have. So it's a sort of first contact mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's set up that they've known about this kind of alien presence for quite some time, but they haven't been able to communicate with them. But what they've discovered now is that the aliens ships like give off a specific wavelength which matches a wavelength that is given off by telepathic humans who exist in the setting, and so they're taking one of those telepaths out to the alien planet to kind of try and communicate with them that way.
That's
the general premise.
Yeah.
And then everything kind of goes all over the place.
So the telepaths are called L1s. I suppose when that's first introduced, you're not sure if it's a creature or what, you know.
They spend quite a lot, quite an annoying amount of time being very coy about that, and there's not much reason to.
No.
Like, it's just, oh, the L1's on board. Be scared of the L1. Have you ever seen an L1 before? No, I've never been on a ship with an L1 before. Who wants to be on a ship with an L1? They're all, like, very scared of having this whatever it is on board, and then it's kind of revealed that it's a telepathic
guy with,
who they keep in like a tank.
I guess go into the sort of the main cast. The first character we see is the doctor. Is she a doctor?
She is, I think. Yeah, she's a psychiatrist.
Oh yeah, that's right. So
her name is Agatha Masterson.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the first person we see, and it's sort of set up. Because when you first see it, I'm like, oh, so this is obviously the ending and it's all going to be told in flashback.
Yes.
She's like the last girl in a horror film, basically. And there's a sort of crazy guy kind of stalking her, dragging an axe along the ground type thing.
Yeah.
So that's where we first see her. But then when it goes all back into flashback, so she's on board to kind of handle the L1. So she's kind of one of the main characters. And then there's Carl, who is... What is his role in the ship?
He's an astrophysicist, and he's kind of the... Like, it's the expedition is his idea.
That's
like,
right.
It's his project.
Yeah. And he has a wife and daughter, and so there's a sort of whole story arc with that, and obviously he's separated from them, and, you know, the tech they have on the ship allows him to relive memories.
Yes.
So you can kind of project memories from your mind through your eyes somehow, and sort of just they're there as kind of holographic sort of immersive experiences when mm-hmm. you're in that kind of booth place, where the memory booth or whatever it is they call
it's a very weird, that memory booth, because it's introduced very early on, and you mm-hmm. see him sitting in it, and it's kind of, you see him having a memory, and then it kind of, a computer display comes up and says memory interrupted or memory ended or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you draw back and you see him sitting in the booth, and it's like beaming the images into his eyes.
Yeah.
And it's, it, okay, that's quite cool. That's a good idea, and you can see how it's meant to work. And then later in, I think it's either that episode or the next episode, you see them use the same thing to read mm-hmm. somebody else's memories.
Mm.
So can you read it through the eyes? Is it not... Because, like, it looks like it's just beaming light into the eyes, and that's what you think it is at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it works a completely different way, which kind of...
Yeah.
It's one of the... Like, it's not... Like, I don't want to pick too many holes in this, because, you know, we could go kind of... a mm-hmm. cinema center route with this.
Mm-hmm.
But there were enough kind of weird things like that where I had to stop and think, well, what does that do?
Mm.
That it started taking me out of the show after a short while.
Yeah, it's very sort of loosey-goosey on the science of the stuff they have around.
Yes, like, it definitely is, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it's not like that stuff gets out of the way. It's not backgrounded. It's really kind of main stuff, which you can't not think about.
Yeah, because they're using it as sort of plot, kind of plot development and stuff like that. So, yeah, you kind of need to know how these things work, because mm-hmm. otherwise they can do anything with it.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess the other main character is, well, apart from the L1, is the captain, who's this kind of elusive figure who for the first couple of episodes only appears as a hologram.
Yes.
And is very reclusive and whatnot, and he's this very strikingly beautiful black man. He has mm-hmm. these amazing almond shaped eyes. Yeah, he looks like some sort of Egyptian statue or something. He's really stunning.
Yeah.
But it's never quite clear why he only appears as a hologram, and then he just, like, suddenly doesn't anymore. I'm not sure why. He then just appears as...
I mean, my first kind of instinct was that because he, like, he does kind of look so perfect, and he's always so mm-hmm. perfectly turned out, I think, oh, this is a computer, this is an AI which is controlling
exactly.
the ship.
Yeah.
But it's not, he's just a guy. He's,
Who's just, it's weird.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I can only imagine it's so that nobody can just physically walk up onto the bridge and drag him away, because he seems to have no control whatsoever over his crew.
No.
Like, his security teams don't really listen to him.
No.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah.
And he appears throughout the ship. It's implied that he's watching through the cameras.
Yeah.
He appears as a hologram who can interact with them. And in, like, the first scene where you explore that, he's talking to, well, a character that we haven't mentioned yet, Melantha.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentions that he's always watching. He's always watching through the security cameras. Like, even when... She asks him if he watches when she's in the shower.
Mm.
And he doesn't say no, which is strange. But it's... Yeah, it's not engaged with it. That's kind of a... Are they all okay with that?
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's like, why? It's just very strange.
Yeah.
And then Melantha, so she's this sort of statuesque black woman, which shouldn't be of note, but it is, because they use her as a statuesque black woman. She's like objectified, like, completely. She hardly ever wears any clothes.
Yeah, her first scene is her undressing.
Yeah, and then she's just like, she answers the door with her clothes half hanging off her shoulders. And it's just like distracting. And but she's sort of genetically modified human
Live in space.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I watched it quite a long time ago now, so I can't remember all the details.
It's quite a funny scene because Roy, the captain, he says it to her. He says, "Oh, you were genetically modified to survive in space," and obviously he's expositing for the audience. But I was waiting for her to go, "Yeah, I know. I'm me. I am actually the person who
There are a couple of moments like that where it's just like, who are you telling this to? Because it's when he explains the mission to the people who have traveled through space for probably like months, maybe years or something, and he's there going, and this mission is to do this, this and this, and so, you know, we've got to keep on track, and they're all just like,
and again, I can excuse a lot of that. I don't mind that at all. It's just that in contrast, when put next to a lot of other stuff which kind of takes you out of it, you start to notice it more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like complete cringe, but no. It's just that it's just kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the first sort of 40 minutes of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was brilliant, but I thought, they've set up some interesting stuff kind here. Let's see where it's going. Yeah, because it's not bad. The dialogue is fine. It's shot reasonably well.
Yeah.
And then it starts trying to do stuff. And it falls down very quickly when it gets to the action.
Yeah. The other character is, well, I suppose there's the L1. Well, we'll just go through the crew first, I guess. Mm. So there's the woman who's the tech. I don't have the list of the character names. So I can't remember. What's her
name is Lommy.
Oh, right. I don't know. I think they do mention it, but yeah.
So. I wouldn't have caught it if I didn't like watch with subtitles on.
Right, yeah. So she is the awkward tech person who kind of jacks into the system.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much her. So she's like a complete cliche.
Yeah, she's got like a data jack in her arm and does Matrix things with it.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I did like is that the data jack is really low tech.
Yes,
it's quite sort of like, it's quite big and it looks kind of sore and and I thought that was quite a nice touch. But she is just the sort of geeky, quiet one.
Yes.
Who has a relationship with Melantha. Which is a weird kind of display for the captain, which is quite odd. So sort of male gaze lesbian relationship.
Yeah, it's like obviously I'm all for queer relationships in TV shows, but after having seen Melantha being so objectified for the 30 minutes before that, you can't help but think, okay, this is not being honest with me. This is just for titillation.
It is, yeah. And also the fact that she looks at the camera knowing the captain's watching after having had that conversation with him saying, "Do you watch me in the shower?" She then performs with her crew member for him, which is just really weird.
And Lommy doesn't actually seem to be that into it either. It's a very awkward scene.
It is. Then there's like the other main crew member, I guess, is the is he a botanist?
He's a biologist.
He's the xenobiologist. Yes. And then is it the bee woman is the botanist? Or did you not get to the bee woman?
I got to the bee woman, but like nobody else seemed to be able to see her. So I don't know who she is yet.
Okay. Yeah, so there's the biologist guy who's like this, I think he's a New Zealander, and he's kind of just like Mr. Chilled out guy who hangs out in his room and...
Yeah. Sorry, I just interrupted with you. I just hit the air too hard. That's all it was.
Oh, right. Okay. But the thing that we know about him that the characters don't at this point is that in the very opening scene, he's the guy with the axe. So he somehow becomes Jack from The Shining.
Yes, and it's weird because he looks, you know, remarkably like Stanley Kubrick. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the first thing I noticed. Okay. yeah, he's, when you're introduced to him, you know, in the sort of flashback, in quotes, sequence, mm-hmm. so the main show, mm-hmm. He's... I quite liked him. He's very nihilistic.
Yeah.
He's the guy who doesn't believe the mission is going to work. He spends all his time in his room. Like mm-hmm. He chews rope, which I don't know if that's a real thing or if it's a space thing. And he talks about it as if it's a drug, but I'm not really sure what that is. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be like an analog for smoking weed or something, but he's very relaxed when he does it, and he's kind of the stoner guy who hangs out in his room.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Yeah.
He just does his thing. That's why I thought he was a botanist.
Yeah.
Because he keeps going on about plants, and he has this, like, weird liquor that he kind of drinks as well. Because, yeah, that's why I thought he was a botanist. I was like, oh, he obviously brews some, like, because there's this, like, cloudy green stuff that he drinks.
No, I just found this.
yeah, exactly. I just found this moldy bottle. Yeah. Thought I'd give it a go. I like him as well.
But I did find it difficult to engage with him after having seen him in the first, in the flash-forward sequence. I thought, okay, well, this guy's going to...
Yeah.
No point getting invested in this dude.
Because he turns into a psycho axe killer guy. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could have really done without that opening sequence, to be honest.
I didn't
think it had added much.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know if it does somehow later on. But it just felt, from the very opening, I felt like I knew where it was going. Because I was like, okay, you've got this scene. That means it's all going to be told in flashback because, you know, it feels a bit sort of Battlestar Galactica because that, you know, had sort of, you know, really complicated timelines and stuff like that going on. So it just kind of felt like they were trying to do a clever thing at the beginning that doesn't really add anything apart from sort of breaking the sense of suspense as to where these characters are going. Because we know, I guess, that they're all dead apart from him.
Yeah.
I mean, unless that somehow isn't what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, it might be one of those fake memory things, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, she does. God,
that would be annoying.
Like, not to go on yet another tangent before we finish going through the characters, but when she, in that opening scene, she records a message, like the distress beacon. She's like, oh, this is not a distress beacon. This is a warning. Don't bring the Night Flyer back. Whatever you do, don't board the ship. And then she stops recording. I was like, why don't you explain what's going on?
As opposed to just leaving it as a cryptic.
Yeah. I'll leave a puzzle audio for the system shock protagonist who wakes up in the basement of this ship.
That's so true. I thought of that. Yeah. So the final main character is Thael, who's the L1, who's like a Cockney geezer, isn't he?
He's very much yeah. So
he was kind of my favourite. I liked him.
I guess I wasn't enamoured of him.
Enamoured, but yeah. This is slim pickings.
Yeah, no, that's true. This show avoids the kind of Game of Thrones, oh, any character you love might die thing by not having any characters that I love in it. He's... I do wonder where he picked up the Cockney accent, seeing as he's been living in a tank since he was born, apparently.
Mm. But then where did anyone pick up any of their accents? You know,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm certainly not leveling that as a real criticism.
I quite liked it. I think he's the most interesting character because the other ones are just so cut from sort of cliched cloth that I mean, he is too, but
Yeah.
at least he's a cockney. I didn't expect him to be a
No.
cockney. And I quite liked his sort of attitude and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so these telepaths are quite powerful. I mean, it's not, yeah. So he can get inside people's heads and make their eyes bleed,
Yeah.
which he does a few times.
Yeah, it's really funny because she explains it. She says, "Oh, it's harmless. It's just like something that happens."
Yeah.
And it's just like clearly not harmless. There are very
No.
few things that make you bleed out of your
I
eyes.
know. She's like one of those annoying dog owners, which
Yeah.
when, their Great Dane is like knocking you to the floor, licking the shit out of you. And it's like, oh,
Yeah.
he likes you. Look. It's like, I don't want to be licked by your dog. Yeah, she's like that. Except your eyeballs are bleeding.
Yes.
So, yeah, so he's kept in this tank and sort of. Yeah, it's quite a miserable life,
Yes.
and he's just being used as a tool, really, and he's getting blamed. There's weird stuff happening on the ship, and he's getting blamed for everything because everyone's just so uptight about this L1 being on the ship at all.
Yes, that's kind of the main source of tension for the whole show, at least the first couple of episodes. So he's there, like something will go wrong. The security people will blame him, turn up, demanding to be let in, or they'll have their guns out, and the doctor will be there saying, "Oh no, he couldn't have done this, he couldn't have done that," and that's kind of the main tension. And you know it's the main tension because I would estimate that they have that conversation about 500 times in the first episode. It's really kind of they start doing it again at the beginning of the second episode, and I thought, oh, I'm going to have trouble getting through this because I have heard this over and over again already.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's just kind of yeah, the whole show is kind of. Well, I suppose we can talk about the sort of horror element. So yeah, like weird things keep happening, and then I just found myself laughing because they're like on the floor writhing in fear, screaming, and I'm just kind of like, I was just questioning myself. I was like, am I supposed to be scared now,
Yeah.
or is this some kind of detached view they're giving me that? I d yeah, I was just like, are they trying to say something here? Because I'm really not scared at
Yes.
all. Like Sabrina, the latest Sabrina was scarier than this show.
Yeah, like it just doesn't that so I mean what are the scary things that happened? So the leader
There's
of
the
the expedition,
girl.
DeBrannon, he
So.
keeps seeing visions of his daughter, and occasionally like they momentarily flash so that she looks a bit like gory or zombified, or sometimes her face is all just completely blacked out or whatever it is, but it's not like you
She's
it
just
it
a
ha
girl in a red coat,
Yeah, the scene hasn't
which.
poised you to be frightened. It's not built up any tension. It just suddenly flashes this at you, and you're like, "Oh, okay, well that's happened then."
Like he's scared, but it's like, yeah.
Yeah,
And
like I
then.
don't have any connection to this girl. She's not my daughter. I'm not gonna be worried about her turning up.
So, what are the other scary things?
There's the laser spider scene in the front, which is really weird because it's not a scary looking thing. Like,
No.
it's a pretty standard robot, and they put some lasers on it against every. Like, she advises him not to. She says, "Don't put lasers on this because they're lethal." And they put some lasers on it, and then suddenly something kind of immediately hacks it, and it starts scuttling around the room, like, lasering people. And, like, again, I couldn't tell whether I was supposed to be scared of it, because, again, they're kind of backing away and screaming, and it is really, like, deadly. It kills all three of them. But I've already seen it, like, in full light. There's no point having it scuttling around in the rafters, because I'm not scared of what it might be. I know
No.
what it is, and I know what it does.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it's kind of a very backwards way to tell a horror scene.
Yeah,
Like,
and especially 'cause like they flagged it.
yes. They outlined its capabilities
Right.
before. Yeah.
Don't do that. That could kill everybody. In a room, in a small enclosed space, you could just get cut in half. Because then there's the visions that people are having, which become kind of stronger and stronger and more violent, really.
Yes.
More gory. So one of the guys who was in the room with the laser spider is having a really bad time on the ship because he's having sort of flashbacks to that. And then also the force in the ship that's giving people these bad visions also preys on that fear of his. And his colleague, who was cut in half, is sort of crawling towards him without any legs, and his eyes have been like lasered out and stuff. And he is absolutely terrified, but it's just not a terrifying scene at all.
Yeah, because you can imagine it being scary for him, but I've not seen the trauma from that perspective. I've just it doesn't resonate with the viewer in the way
at all. And it wasn't kind of built up enough, and we didn't really know that guy. We don't really know the security person that the horror is happening to.
No. And when we have seen him, he's not really very nice.
No.
Like, I've no reason to empathize with him.
No, right. Yeah, because he's, like, horrible to Thale, and he just wants to, like, go around killing things and being, like, a big bouncer on the ship. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just the fact that it's like it's taken bits from every sci-fi horror film and beyond, just general horror. It's just like, you know, it's 2001, it's Alien, it's, you know, just everything. It's like a bit Solaris, for people who have seen that. It's just... everything you've ever seen is done. You know, there's the girl in the red coat, so it's a bit sort of Dark Water or any kind of horror riffing off of Red Riding Hood.
Yes.
And, you know, a girl sort of like with a high voice saying daddy scuttling down corridors. The corridors.
Like, there's really long ones as well as that curved one, which they all seem to end up talking in at various points.
So there's just like lots of corridors with people spinning out in corridors with things scuttling, and it's just such a well-worn path that you're just like, I've seen this all before. And then Thale is completely shot like the kid from Akira. You know, like the way he's shot, and he's got this kind of broad forehead and quite a round face. He just looks exactly like that kid, and it's like, you know, and then obviously he's a telepath as well, and it's just like, just everything is from somewhere else.
Yeah, there's a shot like towards the end of the first episode where it's almost specifically a picture of Hal. Like, it's so clearly trying to bring, like, trying to homage that in a completely unsubtle way. It's a red dot in the middle of a round thing that, where a computer used to be.
Yeah.
There's the domes, from Silent Running.
Exactly.
The botany things. Yeah, everything in it you've seen somewhere else before. And there is so much of that stuff that the plot that it's trying to tell becomes really unfocused because it keeps having to go back and forth between these different things. So you've got the alien subplot, you've got Thale, you've got the laser spider thing for no reason, you've got
the Solaris memory, haunting memories thing.
You've got Debranin's wife, who he keeps talking to on like video chat, and she's kind of erased her memories of the tragedy that's happened in her past.
Right, yeah, that's right, because their daughter's dead. That's kind of coming to light.
Yeah.
And so she's erasing the memories of, you know, to get over the grief.
And there's Melantha's genetic stuff. There's Lommy's kind of social problems and the stuff that she sees when she's in the plugged in. There's so many strands that, you know, what are we supposed to be concentrating on? There's I can't think of a resolution for this that will bring all of those together in a satisfying way.
Because then, well, then it turns out that the ship is the thing that's doing it to people.
Okay.
And that turns out to be the captain's mother, who I think built the ship, because she was this amazing engineer. And it's her consciousness is in the ship. So it's just like every sci-fi, just everything you've ever seen before, just like crammed into one sort of meh TV show.
Again, none of it's done like atrociously badly. There's never a point where I'm thinking, oh, that was awful, that line was awful, that doesn't look right, that isn't scary. It's just
It would have almost been better if it was just really bad.
I mean, you know, there are good sci-fi films which trade on that, like The Fifth Element does that a lot. Silent Running like looks cheap in places, but you forgive it because it's a good you know, film. This is the best it does is adequate, and the worst it does is boring.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And isn't it like the most expensive sci-fi like a TV show or something?
Gosh, is it really?
I
can't see what would have cost so much, because it's all kind of just basic CGI. Like, there's a lot of green screen going on, and it's...
There is a lot,
It's a very poorly lit ship, so it's not like there has to be a lot of detail.
Yeah, they're just on a lot somewhere for the actual scenes. And then there's another 2001 reference when Melantha is jogging through the ship, which is, you know, that sort of, like, ring type thing. And you're just like, okay... So, yeah, I watched 3 episodes and it wasn't getting any better after, you know, because you watched 2. Yeah, and it wasn't. I think I just started flicking through Instagram when I was on episode 3. Because I was just like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's the mother's, the consciousness and the shit. Okay, right. Yeah. It's just like, okay, on you go.
I kept getting distracted by the stuff which didn't make sense to a kind of comedic level.
Oh, yeah, so because we were having conversations, so go on,
So there's, in the first episode, there's a shower scene, and for some reason on the ship, showers are done by, you kind of put an oxygen mask on, and then you get into a tank full of water, and it's not clear how it works, what it's actually doing. Maybe it's just kind of a bath.
I thought that was because of her and her genetic
stuff.
I think it's like some genetic kind of bath thing for her.
That does make sense. I don't think that was made particularly clear.
Mm.
But earlier, like, that malfunctions and she's trapped in there, and she TV drowns, in which she just sort of, she's in there for a while and then she closes her eyes and appears to be dead. And then what's her name? Lommie. Kind of senses that in the data stream that she's in.
Yeah.
And comes in and manually overrides it from a panel on the wall. So I don't quite know what's manual about it, because it's still a computer panel which does it.
Yeah.
Why is that on the wall and not in the tank?
Why is there not a safety system inside?
Yeah, like, once you're in there, you can't control it.
Or, like, have some sort of warning system that alerts everyone that someone's drowning, as opposed to nobody, unless they happen to be sort of like surfing the system. It was kind of ridiculous. And then of course she bursts into life, because that's what happens after you've drowned.
She didn't
need any CPR or anything.
No, she didn't inhale any of the water. She stopped breathing and went unconscious, and that was it. Her body didn't try to kind of get any oxygen in. It was just which, again, I don't want to go down too much of a cinema sins route and really pick it apart, but it's just so blatant. She can't get out. You're like, well, if there was a mechanism inside here to manually release the tank, she'd be able to get out easily. Why isn't there one? How did this get past the kind of invention stage?
Yeah, I mean, they could have just had it that it didn't work from inside.
Yeah.
And then she'd have had to hack it from outside somehow.
Mm-hmm. Which would have been a more tense scene than just...
Exactly, would have been way more exciting. Well, that's just us arguing the TARDIS trying to come
Yeah.
up with something. Yeah, it's very strange. It's such a strange show. Just, yeah,
Then
because it.
there's the thing about the captain who is always watching everything and can get anywhere, can just appear anywhere.
Yeah.
But, like, he never sees any of this stuff going on.
No.
Like, people are openly plotting about him just publicly in the ship, and they're like, well, you know, he's watching the entire thing.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to take any notice of that. And then in that laser spider scene, when he turns up, like, nothing's alerted him that there's lasers being fired on the ship. And he has to come in from the outside,
Yeah.
even though he's a holographic projection. It's just, yeah, this.
Yeah, it is. It's just sort of inconsistent,
Yes.
basically, with it. Yeah, its old own world doesn't make sense,
No.
and things are just sort of not explained, but not in a sort of deliberate storytelling
Yeah.
way. Just in a they just kind of forgot that bit or thought we didn't need to know.
Yeah.
Like, there's this woman who kind of controls bees. It's just the bee woman. Which is just
Yes.
kind of random, and she's the botanist, and of course she's like this blonde earth mother, who's just like floating around in the domes, like covered in bees, and then can send them away, and yeah, just.
I mean, do they go into more of what she is in the third episode? Because she appears in the second. She like talks to Theo, but
Yeah.
it's kind of like nobody else seems to be able to see her. Like she walks
Oh,
around and nobody acknowledges her.
that's so weird. Because no, the Kiwi guy goes to see her
Oh, okay, fair enough.
because he's like, oh, I quite like to like just hang with plants sometimes or something like that. They have this weird conversation, and she's just like, yeah, sort of Mother Gaia kind of. Don't know. It's just.
I guess it's possible that they just forgot to have anyone notice her in the script for that one scene.
It's so weird, and yes, and then he, yes, it was like because Thale can't hear her get into her thoughts because of the bees.
Yeah, the bees are in the way.
Oh my God, it's just weird.
Yeah. And like, I thought the kind of alien the alien presence that they're chasing is very vaguely explained. Like for the amount of time they spend expositing about it, they don't actually say, well, you know, have you ever seen or made contact with one of these people? You're following their ship. They must have noticed you. What, yeah, it's maybe they don't have any more information than that, but
No.
it's not made clear how much they know about this alien
It's
presence.
not, yeah. It is all like how they know that they've got the technology to help them on Earth, and yeah.
Yeah. So this is the problem, and this is why I'm sort of talking about the things that kind of physically don't make sense, even though in another piece of media I might forgive those. It's that I'm so often stopping to ask questions that I don't feel I should have to be asking, that it's difficult to just settle in and watch the show. I can't immerse myself in it. I can't get lost in it because I'm always like, well, what does that mean? That doesn't make any sense.
None of it makes
Yeah.
sense. None of it makes sense. And aren't they called like the Vulcrum or something?
The Vulcan? Yeah, Vulcan, I think it is.
Something very like the Vulcans.
Yeah.
It's just like you couldn't have thought of another name.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I read it, I guess, before I saw it, so I didn't notice the kind of,
Okay, the sort of
yeah.
phonics of it. Yeah, because yeah, I hadn't seen it written down, so I was just like, the what? What are they
Yeah.
called? And yeah, it's just don't go there. Just stay away from V's and Z's. But yeah.
It's strange that they have a name for them which is so alien and so specifically kind of sound like a Star Trek race when apparently they haven't made any contact with them. Well, why are they called this? Why are they not? Like, you call telepathic people L1s. Why do these guys not have a numerical name?
Telepathic humans.
Yeah.
It is true. Yeah, I don't. Who knows?
Yeah.
That is just basically the tagline for this show.
Like... the tagline for this show is just a guy shrugging.
Exactly.
Well, fuck it. Who even knows?
Your guess is as good as ours, says Argy the Toss.
Yeah. Night Flyers.
Yeah. Check it out. Oh, dear. I'd say don't bother, because it's not even so bad it's good.
No,
it's just not even that bad. It's just, it doesn't affect you in any way kind of thing.
Mm.
It's just a waste of time. Sounds really harsh, that, but it kind of is.
Yes. We don't often do shows about stuff that we're both so kind of negative about.
No.
I don't think I am that negative about it. I don't think it's a bad show, which is, I coming back to that, but it's also not good, and it's not memorable.
And you just don't want to watch anymore, because it's just like, not because you hate it, just because it's like, well, I could just rewatch something else that I like.
Yeah. Like, I am vaguely interested to know where it's going. Like, some of the mysteries that it sets up are interesting. Like, the captain being kind of just a hologram is cool. I want to see what that's about, why he does that. I want to see what the Vulcan are like. But I don't have the patience for 10 more episodes before I find out.
But the thing is, in episode 3, he isn't a hologram anymore, and I don't know why.
Well, fair enough.
It was just like, it's like, yeah, because somebody thought he was a hologram and ended up punching him in the chest. Which should have been funnier. So because he just decided to become,
I mean, I'm sure you do find out. I mean, this is from like kind of, this is adapted from a George R. R. Martin novella, which was like kind of critically acclaimed, I think it was nominated for a Hugo Award. Yeah, so there is like a film about it as well, which I'd never heard of until I looked it up for this episode. So this is kind of a story which has a background of being kind of good, but this show doesn't get that across. And whatever it is about the novella and the film that were okay, I can't see it from the episodes that I've watched.
No, I can't. Yeah. Yeah, might be I guess if you like George R. R. Martin, maybe read the thing, but I'm not going to.
No. I mean, so. I might.
Well, yeah, let me know.
I will do. We'll do another episode on it.
Yeah, I might just read the Wikipedia sort of synopsis and see where it went. We'll just watch the last episode and see how wild it gets.
Mm.
Maybe the bee lady's the only one who... Maybe she's doing it all. I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I hope it is as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll probably never find out because it's actually been cancelled now. This show. Like, it did one season.
That's true as well. It didn't do well. Maybe you don't... Oh, so I guess you don't even get to see the end of the story, which is even more annoying.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. No. Okay. I'm leaving that one. Okay, yeah. So that was Night Flyers.
Yeah.
So that'll be that. So if you liked the show, let us know. We're on Twitter at ArgueTheCast, on GameIndustry.com, and all your favourite podcast places.
Mm-hmm.
And we will see you next time. Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.